And call the meeting to order. Let's start with, I guess, roll call first.
Yes. Diane Bruning.
Here.
Perfect. Karen Plummer. Not here. Kelly Anderson. Not here. Andrea Weck Robertson.
Here.
And Alicia Miller.
Present.
Perfect.
Okay.
So we do meet quorum. We have 3 out of the 5 committee members.
Perfect. Okay, so we'll go ahead and do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, this is Christy Ellison, the Deputy Associate Superintendent of Grants Management. I oversee the ESA program. So where we'd like to start today is do a review of the student eligibility criteria that we discussed last week. I'd like to start with reviewing kind of where we ended, and then I have, after kind of considering this a little more, I've come back today with some suggestions on what we might also consider. That I'd like to propose to the committee, so I'll give you a copy of that. In the invitation, there is an attachment called AEP Committee, I believe is what I titled it.
Yes, it was just added about 10 minutes ago.
Correct. So you may want to go ahead and pull that up if you're able to.
If you don't see it on your calendar invite, you may have to go to your email inbox, re-accept the meeting invitation, and then it'll appear.
So to review what we looked at for student criteria for the last meeting, what we discussed was the eligibility for that child would be a review of 1524.01, 1, 2, and 3, which is essentially the students with disabilities, those who the qualifier for getting on the ESA program in the first place. If you need me to read more of that, I certainly can from statute. Then the student should not have reached the age of 22 prior to their last year of contract. And then the student would not meet graduation requirement. So those were the 3 criteria that we discussed the last meeting. So as I considered those criteria over the past week, and there was one in particular that, I don't want to say brought concern, but brought up a lot of questions for me.
Okay.
And specifically that was, that does not meet graduation requirement.
Okay.
And the reason that kind of kept coming up for me was because we're trying to apply what we do with the public school system to a program that is not like the public school system.
Right.
And so my concern was with not meeting the graduation requirements, how are we really reviewing that?
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have the same grades, we don't have the same classes, it's not the same setup, so you
we're
can't
not
do...
We're not meeting credits.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's not apples to apples, you're
right.
Trying to compare apples to oranges. So if you look at the student eligibility criteria that I'm proposing today, it's a little bit different. So what we tried to consider, and I did this with some of our specialists in dispute resolution, was how different this program is. So we tried to look at how different this model could be. So we can read through those together.
Okay.
So the first one, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, please?
This is Corinne in Tucson, and I'm just wondering, I didn't see anything. Is that you sent out, or is there
yes,
some way that I can see it?
Corinne, so what happened was this attachment was added to the calendar invite about 10 minutes ago, so if you may need to go into your email inbox and re-accept the meeting invitation, and then it'll appear on your screen.
This is Diane Bruning. I don't have a meeting invitation, I don't think, but I had a reminder.
Sure, I can do that.
Okay,
I'm going to go back to my desk and email it to everyone individually and see if that works best. I'll be right back.
In the meantime, I'll go ahead and start reading it while she's sending that. Okay? Okay. So for student eligibility factors, so this is factors that our independent evaluation team must evaluate to determine if a student can continue or should continue to receive an ESA until age 22. So what I'm proposing as something for this committee to consider would be the following. Information contained in the most current eligibility documentation, so that would be their IEP or MET report. So when I say most current, that could be whatever really the most current that the parent has. So if the last time they had it done was in first grade and now they're in eighth grade, then that's the most current that the parent has. So there's no requirement necessarily to go back and get anything updated. The team is just going to review what is the most current and go from there.
Oh.
Okay. Then we're looking at students' present levels of academic achievement. So for depending on the circumstances, this could look a little different. So if you're a homeschool parent, that could be a self-assessment or report provided by the parent to the team explaining what's been taught, curriculums used, services provided, and just an overall status of what the student's progress looks like, where they're at, and their progress.
Okay.
If they're attending a private school, this could be the school providing current report cards, any progress reports, and any relevant information from teachers regarding the student's progress. And then in addition to those two, if you are using therapists and tutors, you can have therapist and tutor assessments. So you could have information provided by them, by your service providers, giving relevant reports about the services that they've provided for the child and where they feel the student's progress is versus their need.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So all of that would roll up to the student's present level of academic achievement. Does that make sense so far?
Absolutely.
Okay. Then the third part would be, and this would only be for students where this is applicable and students who actually have the ability to do this,
mm-hmm.
but a student post-school goal. So we could create a form here at ADE that these parents could use where the student would actually self-report on their post-school hopes, dreams, goals. So they would share if they have goals to go to college, for example, mm-hmm. and give them the opportunity to demonstrate their pre-readiness for school and how. And then the last part would be reporting how continuing on this program will help them achieve those goals. So if they were on one more year, then mm-hmm. I would have the opportunity to do X, Y, and Z, which would get me to my goal of going to college.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And then administratively, we would still, as an ESA staff, mm-hmm. we would still review 15-24-01, 1, 2, and 3 to make sure the student meets that because that's a requirement to continue. And then we would also evaluate whether or not the student has reached the age of 22 prior to the beginning of the contract for the next year.
Okay.
So that would be done administratively, so that piece of our criteria would still be done, but rather than not meeting graduation requirements, we would do the post-school goals, the student's present levels of academic achievement, and a review of the most current eligibility.
Okay, and so if you were to say, what would happen? What would be a no for you, I guess, is what I would want to know. So you get the IEP or whatever from the private school, and you see that this child's making progress. That's a yes for you to go forward in the program?
Well, it would be the independent evaluation team reviewing this, not our staff.
Not your staff?
Not
okay.
our staff. So
oh, okay.
all of these criteria are going mm-hmm. to be submitted directly to the independent evaluation team.
Okay.
This is what we're proposing that they are reviewing.
That they are reviewing. Okay.
And based on this, then they would be creating an AEP report, that report for us saying, you know, this is everything we reviewed, this is all the documentation, these are the self-reports.
Okay.
This is our recommendation.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. So,
this is Diane Bruning asking, who's the independent evaluation team?
The independent
what
evaluation.
Person?
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So, the very oh. next topic we're going to be discussing for number two on the agenda, right? It is number two. Yes. We'll be discussing minimum qualifications for the independent evaluation team. So, it is up to this committee to determine those qualifications, who needs to be on the team, and then we will do an RFP. And see who actually responds to that. But we have to decide that criteria, and that's the very next discussion, which I also have some talking points on from our prior meeting
okay.
and our prior discussions. So, so for student eligibility, how does everyone feel about the suggestion versus kind of where we landed this last time?
I like it. I think it's very well thought out, very easy for each person to put together, because you're, as a parent, you're homeschooling, you should be able to write a report saying
these are all the things that I'm doing, and whatever therapies you're doing outside of the home, they can give you a report, put it together, turn it in. Same with a private school. You're in a private school, they should be giving you these things, you know, and you are seeing outside tutors or I mean, it should be easy for parents to compile, I believe.
Okay. Does anyone else have any thoughts? Comments?
I agree. Go ahead.
Sorry.
This is Alicia. I just wanted to say that I agree. I actually like this process a lot more than how we left it last time.
Me
I feel
too.
Like it does it lines it out a little bit more. It doesn't leave so much open to interpretation.
Perfect.
So I think it makes sense.
Great. That's good to hear. Anyone else?
Diane Bruning. I wasn't in the last meeting, and I'm a school district representative, so currently ESA parents come to me and say periodically, can you sign this that my child's still eligible? So you're saying in the process on item 2C, I do have the agenda now, item 2C, the process, the independent eval team would determine eligibility in school districts previously attended or out now for determining eligibility by an eval or waiving an eval?
And that is correct. The parent, of course, always has the right to go back to their district according to Child Find. That does not go away, of course. So they have a right to go back to the district and get an updated evaluation if that child is due for an evaluation. But this whole AEP process and the independent evaluation team allows the parent to do something completely independent of the school. So that is correct. They would not have to go to the school to get an update. They would use whatever their most current evaluation is, and they would present that along with the additional documentation to the independent evaluation team, who would look at all of those factors. And if they decided that, you know, that independent or the most current eligibility documentation was too old to know, so say you have a kid in 11th grade and you have the most current one is from preschool, okay, they might come back and tell you that's not current enough, so the parent may have to go back and get an evaluation, but that is up to that independent evaluator to decide.
That's up to the district or the independent evaluators?
That's up to the independent evaluators to decide. The district
Right.
The district would not be involved in this process unless the parent chose to go to the district.
And just for clarity, because this happens a lot, going back to the district for an evaluation when the child hasn't been with us is difficult. For instance, SLD rule-outs require classroom observation. So I bring up some issues with the previous district or the home district doing any kind of evaluation, because unless they're enrolled, I don't know that, you know, how does that process help? I'd like to propose the independent eval team does the eval.
The independent evaluation team will be doing the evaluation. However, the Child Find still applies. So if a parent wants to go back to the district, their district of residence or district of attendance, you have an obligation. They have an obligation to do an evaluation for that child if they're due for an evaluation. So, and that's kind of a completely separate conversation. That doesn't really tie into this independent evaluation team, other than that the report comes from the school.
At some point, I think at some point in this last few years, every child has more or less had an MET at some point, that we're saying that MET will still be valid. So
we had this is Diane, I'm in Higley and Gilbert. We had a child previously, it's been, you know, the years since scholarship accounts came in, and they now live in Tucson and have been for a while. And so I'm still going to propose that it's someone that's not, you said either homeschool district or district where they live, and I'm going to say, well, it's not very practical to go back to the past.
So,
and I still think the independent eval team needs to do the eval for continuing eligibility.
So again, I want to point out that this is a new process. So the independent evaluation team, that's the purpose of this committee, This is a new process. We're determining what it is that they're reviewing. So to Andrea's point, they're going to be reviewing pre-existing. So if the child had an IEP or MET existing, they, of course, if they qualified under 1524.01, then they had to have had an evaluation done to even get on the program. So if that was the last evaluation that they had done, that is what they could submit to the independent evaluation team. The rest of what you're discussing is completely a separate conversation that's really not something this committee is going to address, because that has to do with IDEA.
It'll be a problem in about one more year when those three-year reevals come due, and that's, I'm bringing it up because if we're going to do a process, we want to make sure we kind of think about these pieces that in the process aren't addressed.
Right. Again, though, that's governed by a different IDEA federal law, so that's not part of what we're going to be discussing today. We can only discuss what this independent evaluation team is going to review or criteria and what the criteria is for that team.
Right. Got it. Thank you.
Okay, so does anyone have any other thoughts on the student eligibility criteria? Are you more comfortable with going this way? Or any other thoughts or possible challenges that might come up from going this way versus where we were?
I stand by this. I think it's wonderful.
Okay.
I agree. I think we can move on past this. It looks good.
Okay. That's Alicia, correct?
This is Alicia, yes.
Okay. Corinne, did you have any other...
I just wanted to make sure, because I got this and I printed it off, that you had said that the first two criteria, which were that they still met the eligibility requirement and the age requirement.
Correct.
And then the graduation would not meet graduation requirement is what you just reviewed. That piece that you just reviewed is replacing the graduation,
yes,
showing the graduate that wouldn't be able to graduate requirement. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And then I just wanted to, and I'm sorry, my son is tutor is here, and so I can't get into the study, but I wanted to make sure that we understand that the question that we're trying to answer with all of this is whether or not, from a parent's perspective, whether or not my child is ready to leave school, you know, whether or not the school still has something to teach my child or has, you know, school, in quotes. That's the question that the team is trying to answer with this information. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. I'm good then.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and do a formal vote. How do you do that? I don't want to.
So we need to have someone. Well, let's actually, I guess we could just hold off on this, and then we could take a vote during the next meeting once we have all the steps in place.
Okay.
So we'll just.
We'll hold off on
the vote.
Okay. Sounds like we're in agreement, but okay. So then the next piece of this, so we're moving on to agenda item two, is a brief discussion on minimum qualifications for this IE or independent evaluation team, what we're terming as an IET. Okay. So I looked at some of the things that we will need to answer for an RFP, and I use that to guide us on what we should be looking at today, what decisions we need this committee to make. So the first, when you look at A under 2A, so who is going to be on this team and what qualifications do we want them to have? So based on discussion from the last meeting that we had, we all agreed, the committee agreed that the parent of the child of that student should be on this committee. So they're one of those members, and that will obviously change depending on the parent and the child who's getting the evaluation. Mm-hmm. But the two constants, so it looks to me like there potentially would be teams of two that would be required to reply to this RFP, and that would need to consist of, based on what we discussed last time, a certified teacher in the state of Arizona. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. And then a licensed clinical or school psychologist. And so with the licensing and then the certified teacher, that kind of covers qualifications as well.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. Does anyone have any comments on 2A? Are there any other individuals you think would be important to be on this team? Or do those three make sense? Thoughts?
I think
This is Alicia. Just a clarification question. It's going to specifically say teams of two, so it has to be two individual people, not one person that can sign as both.
It has to be. It has to be a team of two that consists of a teacher and. So it should not be one person signing for both. It should be two, a team of two.
Okay.
And the RFP would require that if that's the number that you guys feel comfortable with.
Should it say teams of at least two? Or is it better to keep it at two?
You want some consistency in who those team members are. So if we could say something like teams of at least two, but then you're going to have lots of different individuals. So then you have to consider, when you get to cost, you'd have to consider the more individuals you have, the more the cost is going to go up in order for them to want to participate, so they would be compensated adequately. So if you keep your teams lower, that's just something to consider, but completely up to you guys.
I don't think it's going to take more than a qualified teacher that understands how to read the report, and then you've got a psychiatrist that understands these reports. They're going to compile all the evidence, read it, and go, I feel this way. What did you think as a teacher? I feel this way.
And you're going to have someone who understands general education and kind of all those components in those two people. But
and then the parent of that child gets to
participate.
Once they say, okay, I read this, I read this, we come together for 15 minutes and say, okay, this is how we felt. How do you feel? Let's move on.
And then this could be done, because I know this was a concern brought up in, I think, our very first meeting. Mm-hmm. This could be done without ever having to travel. Mm-hmm. So this could be done through Skype if they needed to talk to the child. Mm-hmm. This could be done through email, through phone conversations. So it wouldn't necessarily require going in person to do to evaluate these documents.
Okay.
So
I like it.
And then would the parent be able to invite anybody that they would like to participate as well? So just like a typical IEP as far as like the child's teacher at the time and things like that? Or are you wanting to keep it to this?
Well, I mean, in the criteria, you've kind of already turned in any information you have from teachers, any information you had from tutors and therapists. You've submitted with that criteria for the student. You've already ideally submitted everything you needed, all that documentation from students and anyone relevant in that child's life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something to consider, that you may not need to have that, but you just want to consider consistency in your teams. Would be the only caution I would have there.
Okay.
This is Diane Bruning. I have a question on Arizona Certified Teacher. Is that general education or special education defined?
I think it could be either.
I think it would need to be special, because I don't think...
And I have a question on parent of the student. If the student does not have a guardian, we have a good number of students with IEPs who are their own adult student, and I have no problem with a parent being involved, but what about an adult student? What does that matter?
Well, I think the student would then become, they are the guardian then of themselves, so the student could be the one who participates along with those other team members.
But these students are all
so parent is a firm member, and then should we put adult student in there?
18 to 22, they could be. I'm sorry, can you repeat that question?
18, they're an adult student.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So for those ages, so the first time they go through the AEP process, they likely would not have reached. They're just reaching 18, so the likelihood of the parent participating is probably higher. Now, it's when you have that 18 to 22, so for the next few years, where then that student could step in and fill those shoes if they chose to, or the parent could still do that.
So should we add a clarification? Districts alike, you have guardianship, and so I would either add adult student or parent or adult student.
Okay.
Just for clarity.
Sure. We can do that. And then you had a question about certified teacher.
I think it needs to be a special needs certified teacher, because it's the whole realm of, these are all special needs kids, so it needs to be a special needs
That's
teacher.
What I think, too.
Okay.
I agree. I do, too.
There's just too much about special ed that is individual to our kids.
Yeah.
The only thing I would, so that makes sense to me. The only thing I would also add then is, What about the, like, your general, because you do have your sped teachers, but you have those general ed teachers who then kind of understand some of those other components. Do we think that that's important? Do we not?
I don't think.
Okay.
It's just because I have my mother's a general ed teacher, and I have a couple of my girlfriends are, and they always are saying, you know, why, you've got these kids in our classroom, you know, you're not going to take your broken foot to an elbow doctor. It's just so unfair to the other kids, and the teachers feel so like I'm not doing my job, and that's always a concern. And I'm just surrounded by, I was raised by teachers, and so that's my two cents. I don't know if it matters, but
okay. So we're saying a special education Arizona certified teacher then, and then we amended for a parent of the student or an adult student.
Mm-hmm. Or guardian.
Guardian, yeah. Guardian. So we'll change that language. Any other thoughts on this section?
No.
Do we feel there should be anyone else? Are we all in agreement that these three components or individuals?
Yes.
This Diane Bruning, I would add.
You want teams of two plus the parents. So you want the teachers and the psychologist. That's your team.
Correct.
And then you want the parent, adult student, or guardian in addition to that team of two. Is that correct?
That is correct. So you would, we would be doing the RFP for the, those teams of two that would need to consist of the SPED teacher and the licensed clinical or school psychologist. And then the parent would just be participating in that.
Okay.
So maybe to make
could we add certified to school psychologist, so licensed clinical or certified school psychologist?
Sure.
Agreed. It's Diane Bruning. Okay. I want somebody currently certified.
Okay. We could,
yeah.
I just wanted to make it clear that they were all part of it. Yeah. But we can certainly move that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we have SPED, certified teacher in Arizona, and then we have a licensed clinical psychologist or a certified school psychologist. And then we have, so that's our team of two. And then the third participant would be the guardian slash parent or adult student. Any other comments, questions?
I think the comment about the meeting doesn't have to be in person and can be Skyped needs to go under process versus, I wrote notes while we were talking about this section, but that needs to go down.
Right, that was just me bringing that up at that point in time. But okay. Correct, yes, we can all put that under process.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, or are we ready to move on?
I'm ready to move on.
I'm ready to move.
All right. Okay. So the next piece we have to consider, and I have some questions I'm going to pose, and I did a little bit of research to kind of get some general cost on this, so we had a better idea when we were considering this what this would look like. So we need to look at how many hours should this review of criteria take. I looked at it at probably an average of 3 to 5 hours was what I was thinking, but you can tell me if you feel differently. And then we need to consider what is a reasonable cost for the parent, but also enticing enough for someone to actually want to do this. So you're going to have to find kind of a nice balance there. Otherwise, we could potentially do an RFP and not get anyone to respond.
Right, right.
So that's something you need to consider. So looking at mediators. So those who come in and do mediation between parents and districts and looking at IEP facilitators, they're paid between $450 and $650 per case, and that's usually for about 3 to 6 hours of work. Then hourly rate averages, and this is just, you know, kind of me Googling and looking at several sources online and just experience. So certified teachers is usually around $20 on the lower end. And then licensed clinical and then school psychologists are right around that $35 an hour, $35 an hour mark. So that equates to if you have 6 hours that they're evaluating, that's about $200 per person per case. So that's at least $400 that it would cost a parent.
Which is totally to have an AEP done. The gal at our private school is a BCBA, and she asked one of her girlfriends who does a lot of her IEP as a psychologist, and I said, okay, what what would make you want to do this? And she said, well, if it's coming from your school, I know Brooke and I know how her IEP runs and she has her OT, her PT. If I have to sit down and read this and talk with a parent, you know, if it's going to take me 2 hours, at least a couple hundred for, you know, she charges about $1,800 for an entire evaluation. Mm-hmm. So she was saying, you know, she knows that these are going to come into her very well written.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, $400-ish. I'm good. So you were right on the mark.
And, but that is just for one person's
for
time,
one
though.
Person's,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And then that's not, yeah. But she was saying, you know, that makes perfect sense.
Perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have to consider that that's two person. That's going to be on the lower end. And then something to consider too, looking at the number of students that this is going to impact each year. You're only looking about 30 to 40 students who are exiting in any given year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's only 30 to 40 students times whatever amount you
right.
give. So it unless you make that amount kind of more reasonable for them, that may not be as enticing. Just
mm-hmm.
something to
mm-hmm.
to think about as you're right. deciding. So $400
I'd
probably be on the lower end.
Lower end, yeah.
So you might want to consider something.
And we decide what we pay. When we send the RFP out, we say, this is what we need you to do. This is how much we're going to pay you. And then it's almost like.
We can put cost provisions
mm-hmm.
in
okay.
there.
Okay.
Correct. So.
This is Diane Bruning from Higley. I've been supervising school psychologists for 21 years, and I would say because this team would not be familiar as a school might, you know, over time with a child, I would say 3 to 5 hours per evaluator is probably about right.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also say that the certified Arizona teacher is way underpaid. They actually make, as a district teacher, more along the lines of $35 to $40 an hour. And school psychologists probably about $55 an hour. So I think the hourly rate averages are way under. And back to attractive, I pay tutors for special needs kids $20 an hour outside, and I can't find a one. And I recently begged for $25 an hour, and I still don't have anybody. So I don't think the hourly rate averages for psychologist or teacher are going to be attractive, but then somebody may want to do it. Those are on the way low end of tutor rates, and the psychologist is at a teacher rate.
Again,
I do have a question about cost. It's under independent eval team, and these people that ADE will recruit per RFP, a cost to be charged to the parent out of their scholarship account, out of their pocket?
That is correct. So if they have the remaining funds in their scholarship account in that student's last year of their program, then they can use ESA funds. If they do not, then this would be out of pocket. So that's
okay.
why we're trying to keep it as reasonable as possible, but simultaneously as enticing as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
It's a tough
All
balance.
Right.
So
okay. And it's only on the last year of their entitlement. That's the only time it would up, or would it come up every year after 18?
The way the statute is written is that there's the initial and then there's annual review.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So this would be annually.
It would be annually. But then, you know, maybe when you're going back, it's going to be less time. You know, I don't know. Who knows.
Because you'd still want to get updated information. I don't think the annual review could change so much based on.
So we're talking
the criteria.
You know, at worst case scenario, under $1,000.
Right. So if we're looking at around $400 per case per person, then you're looking at about $800
mm-hmm.
For each evaluation.
Yeah, which is better than an out-of-pocket IEP or anything else that we would have to do, what we've had to do in the past. So I don't think you're going to have too many people.
And I guess my question is it's one case, so it's always going to be $800 because it's a set fee whether that person or whether that team looks at the MET, sees a child has three fairly significant qualifying categories, looks at what they're working on in terms of, like my son is at a very low reading level, he clearly needs to be in school longer, he still has more to learn in this environment, it takes him, you know, 45 minutes, let's just say, And then there's the other side where, you know, a child is closer to graduating, more what they call quote-unquote high functioning, and then that is going to take more data, more reports, more reading, you know, maybe an interview with the parent, the child, you know, more just reviewing all the data that the parent has provided. And it's the same $400 or $800,
well,
or is it
the student eligibility criteria, it would be that same review of that same information for every single child. So it would be consistent. Mm-hmm. They would be looking at the same information every single time, which would take approximately the same amount of time. If you tried to do it by the four, and I understand why that would, you know, why that would come up and why you'd want to, but if you only do 45 minutes times a team of two, that's where you're looking at, is that really going to, are they going to feel like that's worth their time? So that's something you would need to consider, but they do need to do the same review every single year for every single child.
Okay, I wasn't proposing that I know the answer. I was just asking the question. It was just something to think about because
do we need a team?
I'm also thinking about,
do we need a team of two?
I'm trying to think about the timing
too.
Like, are
they
all coming due at the same time, the 30 to 50? Are they throughout the year? Because that's another thing that the teams would have to take into consideration, is like, if they all come due at basically the same time, then they're going to be working like mad trying to get through all these.
Every year.
But if they're spread out through the year, that's a different scenario.
They could be done at any time. I mean, it's really the parent going to those individuals on our list that we've determined from the RFP, and they could go at any point during the year. So those parents who are planning ahead, and you'd want to, to make sure you have everything done in time. So it would, I imagine it would be pretty staggered. And again, we're only talking 35 to 40 students
right.
a year on average.
Good. Okay.
So I don't think it would get too high for those individuals, given that we're only expecting about 6 hours per student per case.
And it could
right, and then it would sort of even out. So if you had people that do this, then they'd have some kids that would take longer, some kids that would take shorter, but it would basically even out so that it would continue to be beneficial for them to do it.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, that's my thought.
Me too.
So are we, does anyone have any other thoughts? Are we comfortable with around 800? Or to Diane's point, she did say that those were averages on the lower end. So, I mean, do we want to consider averages that are a little higher, which probably would put us, I think, around 1,000 if you look at those new averages potentially?
I just think that you're not going to find very qualified teachers of any sort at $20 an hour after. You know, I just know what they'll do in the schools, and we're doing it for kids we know, kind of, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they, $20 is about a sub-teacher rate. A certified teacher makes around $35 an hour, and that's not, you know, if you're talking about a vendor, we pay $45 to $50 for a teacher to tutor. So back to attractiveness, I don't want parents paying a boatload of their money, but I don't know that we'll get very many at $20 or what kind.
But $20 doesn't reflect the $400, does it?
We're talking about if we did a $40 teacher, which is 3 hours, $120, a $50 therapist would be $150, and at the high end for the IEP facilitator person,
you're really paying about $66. If we paid them $400 a piece, that's really around $66 an hour.
Yeah.
For each person at 6 hours.
So
I didn't have the teacher or the psychologist on the same rate, hourly rate. We're talking about
What's the median IEP facilitator?
2I.
What's that? I don't know.
We're looking at...
What is the original cost for a parent, but also enticing for...
Two...
Hourly rate averages.
2B,
yeah,
2B, I, correct.
Two,
the mediators
the
and IEP
one?
Facilitators, that's the $450 to $650 for one person's time for 6 hours. And then I took hourly average rates for certified teachers and psychologists. Again, those were the lower averages. Those were just kind of examples to help us see the math of it all.
Okay, so we're saying that the team is going to be a certified teacher and a licensed psychologist. So
Yeah, where does the mediator come in?
Yeah, where does that come in?
The mediator doesn't come in. It was just looking at similar examples.
Similar examples. You got
right.
Okay,
it was
so
just
what
to
we're
give
saying
cost comparison.
Is that even if we paid a teacher their $40 or their $50, that's $150 for 3 hours or $300 for six. And
well,
then
no.
The psychologist is
$50. Would be $60 for 3 hours.
Well, we're talking, we're
talking high end now because that's where you felt that we needed
be. Oh, okay. All right.
Well, we were talking, we used that rate to kind of, I can't think where we kind of ended was around $400 per person, which
right.
actually equates to about over $65 an hour if they took 6 hours. If
right.
they take less than 6 hours.
Right. So I'm sorry, and this is my fault. I was adding the $450 plus these two. So now even if we're on the high end and it takes 6 hours, we're at, we won't even get to $800, I don't think.
Well, you wouldn't, I mean, you'd have to consider, are we really doing it by hour? Because that's not going to be enticing to someone if they only
right.
take 2 hours
so, right.
and they're only getting paid an hourly rate of 50
right.
or 60.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a lot of money. If you consider $400, so the entire evaluation is $800,
mm-hmm.
you have a team of two. Between the two, that's $400 apiece.
I think that's
so
total.
That would be
don't
more
you
worth
think that's
their time.
Because what if it doesn't take them 3 hours?
It may not take them 6 hours.
It may not take them 6 hours.
Right.
But you're right. We are paying them an hourly rate. That does make sense.
Right. So at $400 a piece, it comes out to about 60. At even $800, if you take it as a whole, it comes
yeah.
out to like $66 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Which
I think
the mediator and the IEP facilitator can be the licensed or certified psychologist. They do that all the time. That's their job. To mediate, facilitate the meeting and the process. So I'd just knock the mediator facilitator out of the whole equation because they're not even part of the team anyway.
Right. No,
I think the psychologist could do it.
Those were just examples. So I only listed those individual, those rates on there just as an example of equivalent individuals who do this kind of work already. So you could have an understanding of typical rates for this type of work. Those are only examples.
So we're saying,
all right,
we're saying
where are we on cost?
We're
on cost.
$400 for the teacher, $400 for the psychologist, $800 total.
Right, so we're at $800, which equates to $66.
Psychologists have a lot more training and student loan debt because they have, especially a clinical is going to be a doctorate. You don't pay them the same as you do a teacher in schools anyway.
But we have to look at this as a team. So what are we paying this team of two? If you're paying the team of two $800 to do this, there's two individuals. It may take up to 6 hours. It may not. But that's about $66 an hour to review these documents. And they're doing the same work. Both
right,
of them
doing
are.
Ultimately doing
similar
the same
work. Yeah,
right,
very
right,
similar
very.
Work. Because they're reviewing the same.
What if additional data needs to be collected?
I'm sorry?
Are they doing testing or all?
Yeah, what if
they're just reviewing
yeah,
the paperwork.
No, they're just.
But they're going to be additional.
I'm sorry, you're cutting out. Can you repeat that? Alicia, I think.
So we had said that some kids were going to potentially need additional data because we're not going to be able to determine eligibility based on a preschool evaluation when they first started, you know, in an empowerment scholarship.
So,
you know, so we're.
To answer that question, so the student eligibility criteria that we just discussed today, that would take place of the place of everything we've discussed thus far. So they would really only be reviewing the most current IEPs. They would be looking at the student's academic level of achievement or levels of academic achievement and then any post-school goals that the student might have. That is the only criteria that they're going to look at ever. So they're not doing extra evaluations. They're not doing any of that work. If they determine that an IEP or an MET is not current enough because the student's in 11th grade and the last time it was done was preschool, then they can say this isn't enough information. You do need to go get a current evaluation, and the parent would need to go back to their school. That's really the only time the parent would have to go back. But this team is only to review those documents. They would be doing nothing more than that.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
If they're not testing, I think 2 to 3 hours is required.
Yeah. Just to do a review of data. That's
a review of data, 2 hours
yep.
would be a big one. That would be unusual.
Yes.
Okay.
So we're saying, you know.
So as a parent, I'm just, I am interested in knowing just in general, and I know you probably have to go back and crunch the numbers, but in general, the amount, say we agree on the $800, what percentage maybe on average, would that be for the students that are exiting, you know, of their award? I know that's, like I said, a pretty general question, but it might be helpful in trying to...
That would be extremely difficult to get that data. So, because you're talking about...
Okay.
Yeah, it's 30 to 40 students every year. Those 30 to 40 students are going to change, and then those 30 to 40 students could have varying levels of awards. So,
I know they vary. That's what I was trying to, get a feel for, like, how much of this is sort of up their award. Like, for some kids, it's a drop in the bucket, and for some, it's been right up to the edge, and then for some, it depends on how the parents spend it, and, you know, but I guess if there is, I was just trying to think if there were any questions, if there would be a way to tell that, but I can see why there wouldn't be.
Yeah, that would be very difficult data to... And one of the benefits of this, once we get it out there, those parents, for those that don't spend every single dollar, and some of them do, so I realize for some of them it potentially could come out of pocket, but there could be some planning, long-term planning, considering in advance, saving a little here and a little there, purchasing different...
every year this is going to come up.
Exactly. So it kind of all comes down to what you know is coming up and the decisions for the things that you're purchasing and all of that. It would have to be, though, something that the parents are considering along the way.
So here's another question. Would there be any reasons that the first one would be 800 and the second one, which is only a year later, would be less money?
So what you'd want to consider is, one, every year they're going to have to evaluate the same information. So even though it moves to the next year, they're evaluating the same thing. If I were the evaluator, my question would be, why are you paying me less for doing the same work this year? That's one question. Two, if you start tiering it and making it less, which I understand as a parent why you'd want to, but as an evaluator, then they're going to start considering, is it worth their time? So for reviewing the exact same criteria. So just something to think about.
Yeah, I would just think that it would take less time than the first time. That was my only thought. And like you said, that's from a parent perspective, because you're sort of thinking, well, you know, the first time, sure, I understand you have to look at everything, get to know my child, you know, all that stuff, you know, within these criteria. But if you do it again the next year, it should be, in theory, it seems like it would be a little bit easier. But I also understand what you're saying.
And you'd, as a parent, you'd have to get all those things updated. So your self-assessment for that year, any private school, if they're going to private school. So all those assessments would all have to be updated, resubmitted. So they would still have to do a full review of all the new data and that student's progress for this year and see where they're at in potentially graduating. So it could be, I can see what you're saying, as they get to know the child, they're going to know some things about that child, and it might get a little easier over time, but overall they still have to review the same amount of documentation that has to be updated every year. And still write the report, right. So.
And it's in the... It's in the bill that we made that it's once
and it is in the bill that it is annually. If it was not explicitly written,
and it's explicitly written that
we
way.
Could do it a different way, but unfortunately it is in there. It annually has to be done. So so going back to cost, then we've kind of landed at around $800 for the team. Is everyone comfortable with that amount? Do we have any other questions, concerns?
This Diane, it's just a thought. You're going to have to lay out what's in the report, what's required for this amount of money. Kind of like it's laid out what a psychoeducational evaluation looks like under IDEA. So back to, am I okay with $800? That's a low end amount for a psychoed eval, but this is a little different. It's not an eval, it's not testing, and so I guess I would know whether that's a reasonable amount if I knew what criteria were in their report they were to produce after this review.
That's the next piece we're going to talk about under process. We have to decide what it is that we want to see in that report, so you'll be part of making that decision as well. So if we're okay with the $800 cost at this point, we can go ahead and move to process and talk about then what would be in that report.
Okay.
can we table the cost until we determine what would be in the report and then go back to cost?
Of course, yeah.
That's what makes sense to me.
Sure. Okay, so as far as process, we'd want to talk about in here, I think in process we want to discuss that the parent or student, adult, guardian, whichever it is, would need to be involved. We could indicate something along the lines of it could be done electronically, Skype, so we would want to put the method of communication back and forth, some acceptable methods. And then as far as what, and we'd want to see in the report, I would think, so this is how we did this. This is who was on our team. And then you'd want to see, I would think, a documentation in that report of, in a summary of all the different data that they reviewed. So a summary of what the parent actually did submit to them, and then what they reviewed, and then a determination. So whether the student should continue or whether the student shouldn't. At the very least, that would be my suggestion for what could potentially be in that report. Any other thoughts?
I think you need to have some kind of, for the RFP anyway, a little detail about either suggested documents or sort of some bottom line considerations that they reviewed, because otherwise too open-ended, and just because human nature, I'm getting paid a dollar amount. I actually prefer hourly rates that are documented by the hour, just for the reason that I might do a review in half an hour and get paid $800. Transparency, or what's the accountability for a child and a family that needs more than that, you know, for their $800. So I don't know. I just thoughts on the matter there.
So they would be reviewing everything under the student eligibility criteria. So it could be any combination of those things. So if you're a homeschool parent, what they would be reviewing is more of the self-assessment of what the parents report on everything they've done with that child and the progress. If they're in a private school, it would be report cards and progress reports and information from teachers. And then on both counts, it could be tutors and therapists and any other people that they're working with, along with the post-school goals and then the student's present level of academic achievement, and then their IEP or MET. So those components are exactly what the evaluation team would be reviewing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it'd be very specific. If we did the RFP, that criteria would be exactly the review, the documents to be reviewed. Yeah, and so it just, the only variation is if you're homeschool versus private school, where the information is coming from. Is it the teachers or the parent?
Okay.
Do we need to have an option like we did with the MET report? Either you went out and got a outside eval, or you went back to your home school and got one. Do we need a choice? Do we need where we could take it to our home school psychologist and special ed teacher in our neighborhood and have them read it?
No, because the determination in the statute that this team is supposed
says
to be
that there has to be an
The team. And the team is the one producing this AEP, which tells us.
It's
completely out of the hands of the school. Okay. But my thought is if they go straight back to those documents that the parent has to submit to them, then that is what they should be reviewing.
Right. Okay, I'm just trying to figure out.
I know this sounds insane, but what's an AEP?
An AEP is what, in SB 1457, that's the whole purpose and point of this committee, is to discuss the annual education plan.
Annual education plan. So okay, thank you.
When they do the report is the annual education plan done by the independent evaluation team. So the AEP is what they're submitting to us to tell us whether that child can continue.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Our bill wasn't written the right way.
Okay, so let's see.
Thank God for Christy.
So my point was means of communication. I think we want to know how you communicated back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
you would want to see who the panel was, so a panel and like qualifications, or who the committee or the team, IET team, so who the team was, names, qualifications, that sort of thing. So you see everyone who participated in it, mm-hmm. Because one thing we'd be looking for as a department is then did that parent or child participate. And did those individuals on that team, of course, meet.
Yes.
And then you'd want to see all the documents. My thought is every document that we set in the student criteria that they're supposed to review, the parent would turn that in, mm-hmm. and then as they're preparing the report for us, for the department, and for the parent, they would say, I reviewed this document with this information, kind of giving a summary of every document that was submitted to them and what they reviewed in that document.
Okay, is that going to be too much stuff for you to review, or would you just like to have your report? I took from all of this information, I took from this, and it's their evaluation.
It's there in one place, yeah.
In one place, would that make your life easier?
It really should be in that report, because those are the factors that they're looking at. I don't want all the documentation necessarily that you submitted to them, but if they give us a summary of what was in that documentation. Right, so they reviewed a progress report, showed student was, not reaching... Mm-hmm. Whatever. Okay. So kind of telling us exactly what those reports told them academically about that child. So they would just give us a summary. The parent a summary, so it's a condensed form of all those different pieces of documentation.
Okay.
Then if the student submitted something for post-school goals, they would say submitted, post-school mm-hmm. goals, student has this plan, and this is how they're self-reporting.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be summarizing, those pieces.
Yes.
And then based off of all those pieces, giving us the determination.
Yeah.
Should this student, are they on track
mm-hmm.
for graduating? Should they continue? Will they benefit from continuing?
Yes. Okay. I like it.
And then that's what we would be looking at really quickly to review. And then we would administratively look at 15-24-01 and ensure that the age level, that they haven't aged out. And then they would get the continuing contract.
Okay.
And then each year it would be that same process.
Okay.
Is there anything more, though, than what I'm proposing that they should look at or should be included in that report?
Well, did they specify something that's, because this is going to certify, they need another year. They need to actually say, in the summary, we reviewed this, this is who looked at it, here's everything, then a final statement of, or determination, I guess, item two.
Yes.
Right.
That needs to be in the report. Unless the state's going to make that decision based on the report.
No, the team is going to make that recommendation.
What?
The state will not be deciding that. We will only be reviewing to ensure that the student meets 15-24-01. And then that they haven't hit the age out. So if the AEP says that they should continue and they met the requirements for 15-24-01 and they are not over the age of 22, that's all we're going to be checking. And then we will issue the contract and move forward for that year.
Kind of buyer beware. I'm trying to protect parents. I think that I'm trying to think ahead and say, well, what would happen if, say, the evaluator that the parent chose their team, and is the state going to say these are the selected vendors for this, or can parents go to any certified psychologist and any teacher?
No, the statute explicitly states that what we decide on this in this committee, what is decided, we will use that criteria then to create the RFP, and we will have a select list based on those responses. We'll have a selected list of vendors that the parents would choose from. So we'll have the ideas that we'd have several at least for parents to choose from, and then they could pick which one they go to and remain with that one or switch every year. It's up to them, but that list would be determined by the RFP. And the RFP will specify that it has to be teams of two consisting of the SPED, certified SPED teacher, and then the psychologist.
Okay. Is there going to be some sort of dispute clause in it? For instance, if the psychologist says they no longer need it and the parent disagrees, I'm just thinking ahead on things that we have to do sometimes. So Just processing.
Yeah, I had that question too. And then I also was wondering, are the RFPs done each year? So every year you would review the cost for these, you know, because right now we don't really know how it's going to go. Maybe in the report you can say, they could say how long it took them to, you know, how much time they spent making it, doing the report, so that we might have a way to learn from the first year, especially, and then maybe reassess if we are doing, if we have offered, if the RFP is correct, yes, or if the RFP is meeting the need. Are RFPs written each year?
No, RFPs are not written each year. I believe it's 3 years, and then we have to go out for RFP
again.
You
contract with that person for
right,
3 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not every single year that an RFP is done because it is a very, very cumbersome process.
Okay.
That takes about 6 months to actually accomplish sometimes. It can take up to.
To fill.
Because there are very
spots.
Formal, you know, there's a lot of formal laws and guidance we have to follow when we do an RFP. So okay. It's not...
Okay. I think it might still be interesting to know how much time was spent by the team. I don't know if that would make people uncomfortable or not, but in general, I don't know if you want to put it in the report, but for me, just thinking about planning ahead and trying to make this program as successful as possible as it goes forward, it would be helpful to know how much time was spent. Maybe it doesn't have to be in the report. Maybe it's something that that data is acquired in another way.
Well, potentially we could write, and I'll have to, kind of once we get through this criteria, I can do some more background research into our RFP process. But there's a potential, similar to how we write cost provisions, you could have a provision, potentially, I'm not guaranteeing this yet because I have to do the research, but for a dispute process, and then even a potential for those individuals reporting data back to us when they do something so that ADE could evaluate what that's looking like for planning RFPs in the future. Again, I'll have to do research, but those are certainly questions I could ask.
Right. Okay. And then I always had a question I had written down too about what the appeal process was.
I'm sorry, about what?
The appeal process. So if the parent disagrees with the determination that's made by the two-person team, is there any kind of a process to appeal?
Right. So I can look at the possibility of including that language in our RFP too. So I just have to do some research and follow up on that to determine what we can and cannot include. But that's a possibility of where we could include that language.
What is the idea as far as what the team process is going to be? Are we having an expectation that they are meeting around a table and actually holding an official meeting, or are we giving them like a document or some sort of a report that they're each putting their own information into and then just submitting that through the parent?
I mean, we could certainly create as a department the form and AEP and what that could look like and have them all consistently use the same documentation. That's a possibility. But as far as having to meet in person, I mean, I think that that's up to the team. I would think it could be up to the team and the parents. So if what works best for communicating back and forth for that team, I mean, it's kind of like any business, whatever their practices are for getting the work done, as long as they get the work done. So I don't know that we need to have any of those expectations, but I guess then the question becomes, do we? Because a lot of this review could be done electronically, just in my thought, could be done electronically with phone conversations back and forth between the two individuals on the team, and then conference calls with the parents to discuss everything, potentially. And then no one, I mean, with thankfully the use of technology, no one would technically have to be in the same room. But then others may prefer that method. But I think, I think that would be a determination made by those teams and how they want to operate.
Okay, so just somehow this two-person team is briefing the parent on the findings and then submitting a report of some sort to the parent for them to turn around and submit with to ADE.
Precisely. So what we could write up is that there has to be the review done of these documents, specify those documents, and then a conference call that lasts, you know, approximately, or just at least a conference call has to be held with the parent at the end of this process to present the report and discuss findings. So we could write that in there for process, if that makes sense.
That works.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that way the call or the conference with the parent absolutely happens.
perfect. But I think it's, you know, the parents deserve, at least they're paying a lot of money. Well, either they're paying a lot of money or they're using a lot of their ESA funds, but regardless, they at least deserve to be briefed on the findings.
Right, absolutely. And we are saying that the parent has to be involved in this process, so that would be the parent. That makes sense to me that would be the parent portion.
Mm-hmm, exactly. What other than gathering the data and submitting.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you're not really expecting the parents to talk to the team throughout the process except at the end when the team presents their findings?
Well, I mean, the parents certainly could. It just depends. You submit everything
You're
to them.
All the evidence.
The parent compiles everything. You submit it to the team. The team's going to do some review and go back and forth. I would imagine if they have questions, they would come back to that parent, mm-hmm. and there would be kind of ongoing communication. And then at the very least, then a formal meeting, kind of conference call or in-person meeting, whichever method that they want to go, but then there would be a formal discussion with the presentation of what the report is looking like and a last discussion on what this is going to be and then finalizing.
I just want to make sure it wasn't limited to the very end of the process, even though I know that they write things up and they submit things. I understand that, but sometimes just being able to talk to somebody, having a conversation is helpful. And you know, they might say they look over something and they have a question and they talk to the parent and the parent says, oh no, I can get that for you. You know, that's not a problem. I'll just go talk to so-and-so and I'll bring it in. So I just wanted to make sure it wasn't limited to, I like the idea that they give them a heads up so they kind of know what's going on at the end, but I wanted to make sure it wasn't limited to that.
No, absolutely not. I think it's a very, a dynamic process of back and forth is what I imagine would happen. Especially because these are independent evaluators. These are people who don't know your child the way that your school would. So they're going to review the documents, but I imagine along the way they would have some questions and need that kind of personal testimony from those parents or those adult students about that child. So I do see this being a very dynamic process.
Mm-hmm. This is Diane. I had a psychologist once who did a psychoed evaluation without meeting the child. And I wrote them up because it was so bad.
They're not doing an evaluation.
I have some worries about an independent team who doesn't know, and that person was in the building. I have some reservations about an independent evaluation team who's never met the child or parent, doing a review of documents. And I'm going to ask the parents out there, how many times have you seen a document, an IEP or an eval, that doesn't sound like your kid at all?
But I am the parent, and I am providing the documents. I'm providing all of their therapy notes. I'm providing the IEP from the private school. I'm providing everything that person's going to read so that they can make an educated decision, and then I am going to be a part of that decision.
Well, parents have to be, because I think that
right
Arizona
certified teacher, licensed clinical certified psychologist, parent of student.
So I think one of the is Christy again. Yes, that is correct.
I'm trying to advocate that somehow the psychologist, at least, and it doesn't have to be in person. It could be Skype. I think they need a contact. I'm advocating there is a contact before the end. But if parents don't feel that's necessary, I'm okay with that. I'm not okay with it, but I think that if parents are okay with that, then...
So to clarify, what you're indicating is that in addition to review of those documents, that there would be a face-to-face or via Skype, because one thing that did come up earlier in some of the earlier meetings was the... proximity of which these teams would be from certain, you know, very rural areas, that it might be difficult for them to get there. So you're saying, in addition to the criteria A, B, C, under 1, A, B, and C, that you're proposing that there is at least a Skype interview or an in-person interview of the child.
An interview, yeah.
Okay. So, what does everyone
I don't know how that all plays out in rural kind of ways. I actually studied that at ASU in my doctoral program. You do need alternative methods, and you don't want to make it hard for families, parents, or adult students, but this is an important decision, and I think that we can't be too casual with criteria for these independent teams, because I see a couple of things. One, they make bad decisions either way, and kind of cursory decisions, and this is a pretty important decision. So unless we're just rubber stamping years until age 22, and maybe that's what we're doing, and if we're doing that, then they can do anything without a meeting. But, you know, if this is going to be meaningful money that parents are spending out of their scholarship account or out of their pocket, I want it to be meaningful.
Okay.
Like, where does DDD fit in for this, for instance? DDD often tells school districts, we want an eval, a full eval, we want testing before they go out at age 22, and for a variety of reasons.
This whole process is going to be separate to all of that. That's kind of that's the whole purpose of the committee, is to design what this is going to look like. So I think the question on the table is, for the committee, is do we want an interview via Skype, so electronically or in person, whichever actually fits the needs best of that family? Do we want that to be a component of the student or the process, the IET meeting?
Maybe. I think even electronically. I'm not trying to, like, put people in the same room even electronically. I think some kind of interview where parent input, because right now it talks about documents, curriculum, what they've taught, their progress. There's kind of bigger pictures than that, but I don't know what that interview would look like. I have some ideas, but I don't know whether that's how defined you want this to be. But I think that if I were a parent, I'd want them to meet my kid and before they made that decision, and I don't know how that plays with parents. Parents are submitting the material for the person to look at, so maybe that's part of what they... Maybe
one of the options might be... One of the options might be to have as part of what the parent submits is you could do something, and I've done this for different reasons. The people that work with my son is, I mean, you can do a little video, or you could, you know, go to, you know, school and or to the school where her daughter goes, and you could, you know, kind of take some little snippets or something to kind of help the person, even just get another piece of information that does. That the parent would have an option of including, whether their student was homeschooled, whether the student went to a private school, or, you know, maybe a therapy session or something that would just provide additional information. That might be another option.
I like the idea of a student's website, a family's website.
Yeah, I think some people have issues with privacy. I know some people don't, but some people have issues with privacy, so... I'm not sure exactly how all that would work, but
right.
You know, even
well,
how you extended it.
Well, provided only, yeah.
So
I don't know. I bring it up just because I don't allow psychologists to review anything because I don't trust sometimes the. And I wasn't thinking about what parents provided for review. I was thinking more along the lines of previous evaluations, previous IEPs.
So the,
sometimes they don't capture the kid, but maybe that's a small point.
So, just to kind of get a gauge of where we're at then, I think the question still was posed whether or not we want an interview of that child to be part of the process. Do we have a consensus on where we're at with that? When we say interview too, we're going to have to outline what this really means. Is this just the personal contact with the child to really get an idea of their need and their challenges? Without going into a full evaluation, because if you start going that direction, then you're going to need to start talking about costs, because that's going to be more that this team will have to do. So the question is, how far do you want that to go then, and do you want it to be part of the eligibility?
Well,
or part of the
process? I can kind of put this together with the child find process in special ed. Basically, what this team's doing is taking a review of data, which is a decision that schools use to decide if they have enough data. And we're making a determination on continued eligibility when a school team goes one step further and collects additional data or says none's needed. So maybe the question, I don't know whether the question even wants to go there, is more data needed? Because we're basically using what I call a MET 1 process to do a MET 2 decision.
Well,
so
the additional data
got a lot of acronyms, but
I mean, they're using the IEP or the MET that's already been prepared, but then the additional data is that data that the parents are providing, that data that the student is self-reporting, or that data that therapists, tutors, private schools are providing. That's your additional tier. So then the question still is, do you want to go one step further and have, as part of the process, when they're reviewing all of that documentation from the school, from the parents, from the service providers, do we want an interview with that child, just to face-to-face or via Skype, whichever is most convenient? We can have both methods as an option. Do we want that to be a component where they review face-to-face or talk with that child to get a better idea of need and challenge?
Child or parent, I got no problem with the parent talking.
Yeah, I would say, this is Alicia, I would say both, definitely parent and hopefully child input somewhere along the process, but I think I was with Diane last week as far as just some confusion in between, like, what exactly are we looking for when it comes to eligibility, but I think I'm a little bit, I think I've cleared it up now as far as, like, the MET has already been completed, so the eyes have already been on the child. The eligibility for special education services has already been determined.
Correct.
So this is just eligibility for continued education past the age of 18.
Absolutely.
ESA scholarship.
Yeah.
So that's all it is. So as far as the psychologist having to, because I'm a psychologist, as far as me having to put eyes on a child to make this determination, I'm not sure that that's absolutely necessary, because I'm really going to scour that MET report and make sure that all of the information was in the MET and the eligibility was was sufficient,
right,
for me, in addition to all the additional information that the parents are going to supply as far as grades and progress and all of that.
Correct.
I think that all works right now while the evals are fairly current. I'm just trying to look ahead. I've had people come to me in Higley and say, my child's been in a private school, a parochial type school, for 4 years. Mm-hmm. He's in fourth grade now. We haven't laid eyes on him since the year before that fourth year, and I'm certifying he's still eligible. And he's a speech child.
Right.
I don't know if he is anymore. And so back to, I'm scouring his pre-kindergarten evaluation where he was eligible for speech. And I just don't know that. I get we're writing this for right now, and it sort of works for right now for most of the 35 or 40 kids. I don't know how long our process is going to work if we get farther down the road and it's 7 or 8 years. How is an independent team going to make a decision on continued eligibility on such old data?
So
that was my concern last week, but I'm a little bit more clear now, because this team basically is going to take that information and say, we don't have enough information to make that determination.
Precisely.
They're going to then get the school team to do a new MET.
Correct.
So it's kind of more of a gatekeeper, right?
Correct.
Yes.
So if the student...
And they need to do that early process. They shouldn't, you know, it should be like the very first thing they look at, so that the parent has half a chance to get it in on time, because those things do take time. So that needs to be the first thing they look at, because that's probably the most time sensitive. If they're going to say we need more information from the school district, it needs to be right up front, made a decision, and not, you know, after they've gone through every other report in the file.
That's a good point.
I agree. Yeah, because it's going to be 60 days. More than
so basically, you're going to go back to a district every year for an eligibility, or no, it's every 3 years?
No, you wouldn't even necessarily have to go back every 3 years. What they're looking for is if it's current enough with all the rest of the documentation to be able to make a decision. If you have an 11th grade child with the last evaluation they had was preschool, as an evaluator, I would say that's not enough. I potentially could not tell if this child really has a need. So it is their responsibility then to say, I really can't make this decision. You do need to go back and get a current evaluation. Now, if their evaluation is in the last 5 years, and I'm not, you know, a SPED person, but there are certain needs that just are those needs, and they're not going to go away, you know.
Right.
And you're going to know, you're going to look at that data, even though it's 5 years and not just 3 years, you're going to know this child, along with all the other evidence, can continue.
Yes.
So I think that that's where that kind of responsibility goes back to the team to say, okay, really, truly, does this data give me enough to determine if the child can continue? Mm-hmm. And if not, send them back to get the update if you need it. but only if you need it.
Mm-hmm. I think kind of another comment I have is the report by the parent on what's been taught, curriculum, progress reports from the private school, report cards, therapist assessments. That really isn't what we have. That informs evaluation eligibility decisions, but that's more AEP or, you know, that's more the what's our plan kind of decision. So I do want to clarify that, at least in my mind, eligibility information, it does overlap somewhat with what the parent is being asked to provide, which is current and what's going on, but it's not all.
Right, but that's why it's only one component. It's an added level of information from the parent to give to that team. But again, it goes back to that eligibility, that IEP or the MET that they're submitting to that team that already has determined the eligibility for the child. So that's just additional documentation. Anything from tutors and therapists, that's to help them make decisions on where the child's currently at, in addition to already knowing what their eligibility is.
And we are trying to make a plan. We're trying to make a plan if they're going to stay in or if they're going to get out.
Right. So, you're not creating an IEP. You're not creating any of that. Right. You're just trying to determine, based on the things that have already been created, the determinations that have already been made, and supporting documents, would this child benefit from continuing another year in school? That's really all that they're deciding. And with that information, I'm not a SPED person, but it seems like if it's updated, that would be enough to tell, especially because these are people who work with these with children with needs all the time. So just my thoughts.
I would also say that, going back kind of the discussion about if you need more info, go back to the district for an evaluation. Two things. One, what district? Because I like the idea it's where the child's going to school or lives or whatever, because that can vary. I also like the idea in the current where we, as the district, could say, we agree this child still remains eligible. Actually, districts have been the IET so far, and I have no problem. I would read evals and say, oh yeah, this child continues. It's not every case, but I'd like to keep that waiver in there, because if a parent goes back and the district says, we're fine, this kid's still eligible, I'd like to be able to do that without having to go through a process.
You can do that currently. So what often happens when a parent goes back is the school will say, you know, that to continue and allow to continue eligibility. That's something that currently happens. So that wouldn't change. Nothing about what the schools do will change in any way. This doesn't really impact them at all. Child fines still exist. All those laws still apply, and how you do that still works exactly the same. This is a completely independent process from all of that. The only time that gets back involved again is if the IET, the independent team, says the eligibility is so old I can't tell, you need to get something updated. Then they go back to the school, and all those laws with IDEA and everything with child fine, all of that applies. Nothing changes there.
Well, I hope these independent evaluators don't come up. I guess if it's 30 to 40 kids a year, it's not going to break the bank. But I have had DDD ask for evaluations that we thought were unnecessary. It was kind of to help out for future, which I'm not opposed to that either. But on the other hand, some of it was unnecessarily recommended. So I don't know where this is going to go with that last discussion about can districts still waive and parents want an eval. A lot more parents want more information than not. And so I'm a little fuzzy. I think parents got strong-armed at times to not ask for testing because there's that old, and I hammer people when I hear about it, they may not qualify anymore. Well, and these are kids with mild disabilities. I'm not talking about kids with comprehensive complex disabilities that are easy enough to see or discern. I'm talking about the more subtle ones, and I don't know how many parents of students with subtle, mild disabilities may be applying up till age 22, but we've got to be a little careful if we're trying to help parents and kids. stay in school, if that's the goal or not. You know, we've got to be a little careful about making these requirements and being sort of open-ended about, well, it's easy enough to go back, because that doesn't always work out well. Anyway, I'm just being honest.
I understand that and appreciate the information, but a lot of that, again, is outside of this process and what we have to discuss and determine today. Certainly good to consider. But I do want to circle back because we are getting kind of getting close to time, so I want to make sure we have time to kind of wrap up where we're at. So with the having the student interview, I'll recap where I felt like it kind of landed, and then you tell me if I'm wrong or not. But it sounded like we would not need that because it really is just a review of the student's current eligibility and current documentation from the parent to determine if they should stay in school another year, if that would be helpful to them. So are we in a consensus that an interview would not be necessary?
Yes.
Yes. I'm on the fence.
That was Diane, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think that's not best practice, but I'll go with the committee.
And did we hear from Corinne?
Are you on the phone still?
Yeah, I'm still here. I don't think it should be a requirement, but I could see where, you know, where a parent would maybe put that in terms of, you know, the hopes, the dreams, you know, get to know my kid, that kind of thing. But I don't think it should be a requirement.
Okay. Okay, so then it sounds like we've landed on that the interview will not be a requirement. Okay. Okay. So I'm going to circle back then. We're going to go through... Actually, okay. With that in mind, what we've talked about being in the report is the means of communication, so how the communication occurred with the parents, whether it was in person, back and forth, phone conference, so what they did, who was on the panel, the qualifications of that panel, all the documentation that they reviewed that the parents submitted with a summary of what they looked at and what information was on there. So if the student wasn't meeting grade level or wasn't, wherever they're at, and then a determination, so the eligibility, should they continue, should they not, that would need to be on there. And then, let's see, then there would be a conference call or some kind of meeting with the parent at the end to present the report and the findings, and then that looks like it's it. That's what's required in the report. Do we have anything else?
No, I think that sounds good. This is Alicia.
Okay.
I think it sounds good. Andrea.
Okay. Corinne?
I'm trying to think of parents. What if you pick a team and it doesn't seem like it's going well? Like, you know, you're not getting return phone calls or emails or, you know, for some reason you feel like you picked the wrong team. Is there going to be anything that... You know, is any wiggle room or, so, you know, sometimes people don't connect or, you know, it doesn't work out.
The team would be obligated to fulfill the requirements.
Is there something we could consider for that?
Mm-hmm. So the team would be obligated to fulfill the requirements set forth in the RFP. So if you did contract with them, they would understand what their obligations are and should be doing it. I did say I would look into a dispute process that we could potentially include in the RFP, but I do have to do some research, so I can't give any specific answers, but I will look for an ability.
All right. I'm trying really hard to think of every scenario here, because I know that there's going to be parents out there that are going to be, you know, asking these questions.
Okay. And then, Diane, did you have any other added comments for what should be contained in that report?
I don't think so.
Okay. So then, circling back to cost, we landed at $800. Do we still feel that that will be sufficient, as in not too cumbersome or burdensome on the parent while simultaneously being attractive enough to a vendor to actually want to do this?
Thinking about a range depending on, I guess, you know, more complex needs to review and documents. I'm not sure if that would take a little more time, but if it's a set fee, that's one way to cost control it. So
okay, I'm going to interrupt for just a second. I'm so sorry, Diane. I'm going to interrupt for just a second. This is Rebecca Barella. I'm going to ask that we take a quick 3-minute break, and we can resume in just a second, if that's okay with everyone.
Sure.
Okay, just a 3-minute break. Thank you very much. If everyone's okay to resume, we can resume at this point. Is everyone still here?
Yes.
We're good?
Yes.
Perfect. Corinne?
Sorry, yes. I'm
okay,
here.
Good. Okay, good. Okay.
Okay, so we were on cost, the $800. Are we all okay with this cost? Given the criteria that they're going to be reviewing, does this seem reasonable?
Yes. Yes, Andrea.
I don't think we really have any way of knowing for sure. I think we're doing our best to take everything into consideration. I think you have a wide variety of kids that the teams are going to be looking at, and I think it's just, you're really just trying to average it out to make it the best across the entire population of both teams and students. So I think with the information we have, it would be great to be able to reevaluate that, but I see that with the RFP process, that's really not an option. So,
right.
And I'm going to say yes, just because I don't have any other way to know how to come up with anything better.
Okay. And it's certainly something, like I said, I can look into putting that reporting requirement, so ADE can take a look at that. So when we get to that 3-year point, when we have to do another RFP, we can look at that cost again and do an evaluation of whether or not that actually works or if it doesn't. But along those same lines, we'll still have to look at what is actually enticing to these individuals to do this, because it does have to be worth their time while simultaneously being cost effective for a parent. So it's a tough thing to balance. Okay, so we have Corinne, Andrea. Alicia.
I'm here.
What are your thoughts on cost?
I ran to the restroom during break, so I'm just getting back. thoughts on the monetary piece?
Correct.
Is that what you're asking?
Yes. Is $800, given what they're reviewing, sufficient for the contractors and reasonable for parents?
So I'm having a hard time because I don't think it should really take that long for the majority of this, just because I'm thinking as a psychologist when I'm reviewing a lot of the previous data from just 3-year reevaluations, it certainly doesn't take that much time. But obviously we're asking them to do a little bit more as far as, you know, conference calls with parents and reviewing more data probably than just with it just 3 years. But still, that I feel like maybe it wouldn't be quite that much for parents. Is it possible to consider like an hourly with a cap? So like, you know, an hourly of $65 an hour for psychologists and $35 an hour for teachers, but then a cap of $1,000 for the team or something like that?
I mean, it is something you can consider. The only thing I would caution is when you get to that RFP process, if some of these kids would only take 1 hour, two people, I mean, the cost for them to do it, is that going to be enticing enough for them to do an RFP? That's the biggest thing you'd have to consider.
How do we know they're not going to just take 4 hours and then it costs more than $400? Do you know what I'm saying?
I think
either way, they could report. I mean, they could invoice you based on the number of hours, but then they can invoice you any hours they want to.
Right.
I mean, I think you're still going to... I think either way you slice it, you're probably going to end up in similar situations. Mm-hmm. But that's just my thought.
Yeah.
Because
I've contracted with...
They could invoice for, I don't know.
And just to add my opinion here, this is Rebecca. You know, if we know how much it's going to cost, the parent can budget for it. Whereas if it's open-ended because it's hourly and I don't know how much they're going to invoice me, a parent may not be able to plan for it in the previous year to budget for that money and may have to pay out of pocket. But that's just an idea.
Right. Yeah. Unless we set a cap and they budget for that cap. Like, we know it's not going to be over $1,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like $800 is a lot, just based on the amount of work that I know that I would do. Because when I've contracted with school districts in the past, I do, I typically do just an hourly rate. And in the past, I've done like a cap of a certain amount. So basically, that covers. I'll do an hourly because, you know, sometimes just the review of data only takes me an hour and a half, 2 hours. But then if I do a full evaluation, then it's going to take me, you know, 8 to 10 hours.
So that was Alicia, correct? Alicia, what would you recommend price-wise, in your opinion?
If we're going to do not hourly, we're going to do an actual cost for the full thing, I would say a cap of like six, honestly. 600?
I was thinking 400 to 600 as a range.
Okay. So per person, you're asking two people to spend 4 to 6 hours each.
Oh.
Potentially.
No.
I don't think it'll be 4 to 6 hours.
That's another question. When we say 800, we mean for both people.
We do mean for both people. So that's really 400 per person if you split it down the middle. How they do the split, I mean, really, we won't be deciding that, but... Theoretically, that's about $400 per person for anywhere between we put it at the maximum of 6 hours would be the maximum it would take to kind of come up with that average amount. So if you're talking $65 an hour times just a few hours, that becomes, you know, kind of drastically different for that person. So $65 an hour times even 3 hours is only $195. So...
Right, I was thinking $200.
Right. But I can see where people wouldn't want to sign up, you know, they wouldn't really go after the RFP if I'm only going to make a couple $100.
That's the concern. You're trying to balance between what's affordable for the parent and what's enticing for them to actually, because they're going to have to, an RFP, I will just tell you, is a very lengthy, cumbersome process. So they're going to have to put a lot of hours just to apply for this. They're going to have to develop their team. They're going to have to submit all of this information about who they are and what they're doing and how they're going to do it. There's a lot that they have to do. So if the dollar amount doesn't make sense to put in that kind of work, there's a likelihood that it won't happen, which is why I'm cautioning that as you consider this question.
Well, my other caution is if the numbers are 30 to 40 a year, that's really not going to be effective even at $800 probably, but anyway.
That's the other consideration.
I don't know.
Because really your potential is only about $32,000 a year.
Parent. I think $800 is too much for a parent.
I agree,
but it's also the cost of, you have to balance the scales. If you are going out to get a whole brand new evaluation, you're talking $1,800 minimum to 25.
Well, that's if you go to certain people. If you get a real one, it's about $650.
Well, so a typical psych contracted price might be like $65 an hour, somewhere around that, right? So
they'll charge more than that, but I'm saying
could
make about $55 is what I said, but yeah.
So let's take 60. So 60 right in the middle. So 5 hours is $300.
Yep. And I think they facilitate the meeting, which is kind of where that person was. And I think that the teacher has a lesser role in this, honestly.
But so, they don't, though.
But it's still their
they're
time.
Reviewing the exact same information.
They're doing the exact same job.
So they don't.
Right. The reporting might be different. There might be more that the psych has to report, but they're going to review the same document.
But you're talking, okay. So if you look at this, if you're saying $600.
If you step out, we won't be in court.
Well, we have three on the phone. We'll still meet four.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
You can go. So if we have, if we're talking $600 then for these individuals to do this, and you times that by at most 40 kids a year, and you have to know, consider that there always will not be 30 to 40 kids a year. That's just an average thus far, but that doesn't mean that will continue. So that's only that's $24,000. Now we have to go out for RFP. These people have to do a tremendous amount of work to come back with that RFP and actually submit a response to it. And then we're going to have, we're hoping, right, at least 3 to 4 vendors on that list. So then you're talking about 3 to 4 vendors splitting only a potential of $24,000 a year. So that starts cutting in, and that's only about, if you have 3 teams on that list, that could potentially be only about $8,000 a year additional for all that work. So those are the bigger implications of what you're, that it's going to impact when we make this decision.
Does it have to be an RFP? Arizona does. When you don't have any competition, you don't get any price breaks. You know what I mean?
We have.
So
to.
I'm thinking, is
Diane,
we set the criteria. Let people pick their own people
we
and
can.
Say whatever.
Based on statute, we have to go out for RFP. So that's written in the law. We have to. We don't have a choice there, unfortunately. So it limits us to that process.
Okay. It means parents are going to pay more, I think. But
they're paying for the response to the RFP, unfortunately, not so much the hours that, you're putting in, which I understand. I do understand that. But
yeah. Well, they shouldn't be paid to put in for an RFP. I've been an independent contractor, too. And
they're not being paid not to
for
put
this,
in an RFP.
But I don't get paid for RFP time.
They're not.
I know it takes time. Yeah.
No, no,
I know. I get it.
Yeah, they're definitely. They're not getting paid to do the RFP. But as a business person, I would consider my time that I'm spending to do it. And is it cost effective? Is it cost effective? Is it worth it? Any business person's going to consider that when they're putting in that amount of time. So it's just something. I only bring it up because it is something to consider. Because if we do not get responses to the RFP, which is a lengthy process. Then we're kind of back to the drawing board. Then we have this AEP process with no one to actually provide the service is the concern.
Yeah, legitimate. Well, I'm open. I'm just trying to protect the parents as far as the amount of money that they're actually paying for. Not quite that much work.
So are we saying $65 an hour? Because that's what I'm hearing is we could either do like a flat $800 an hour, which is basically about it. We were looking at $65 an hour anyways. The breakdown came out to $66. And we were just doing $66 an hour times 6 hours. So that's how we came up with $800. So if we're the other proposal I'm hearing is essentially $65 an hour times however many hours per person they spend doing it. Would be the other suggestion I'm hearing. The only thing I would say to that is, and you would hope people wouldn't do this, and you'd hope that they would be ethical, but oftentimes when they have a limit to bill up to, people do tend to do that. So the thing about it is you may still end up in the same position. Something to consider.
Yeah.
But they would have to document somehow how they spent their time. I mean, you can't do something for an hour and bill for 6. I mean, there has to be some way to show what they did. And it seems like that would be true even if we did a set amount. There has to be some accountability.
Well, I mean, there would be an invoice to the parent to show that they took this many hours, they reviewed these things. But beyond that, I'm not sure. And with an invoice, again, you'd hope that there would be, you know, complete honesty, and that if it only took them 2 hours to do something, they're actually recording 2 hours. But that would be hard for anyone to control. So in order to control cost, that flat fee might be the other way to go, so that it doesn't get past that $800 mark. Also, you have to consider there are some kids where it may take them more than six. It may take them the whole 6 hours. I don't know for sure. Could take them more, depending on what they're doing and the interviews with the parents and communication back and forth with the parents. Some parents have more questions than other parents. All that communication, all that time, I could see that being easily 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And then along with the parent meeting, along with the reviews, mm-hmm. all of that back and forth. Because you're really paying, you're paying for all of that time. So if you start going hourly, that could be over $800.
Yeah, that's true. Be a cap on it. Yeah. I do have a question about this, sort of in the process of it. Do parents pay directly to the evaluator team, or does it go through the state?
The parents are responsible for selecting the person that they want to use and for paying that individual and all the communication back and forth. The only part that the department plays in this is that, obviously, if you use ESA funds, we're always monitoring funds, and we're going to be looking for that AEP report to come back to us, and we're going to evaluate that. But all the business is between the parent and the team. So we are getting really close to time, so I want to try and wrap some of this up so we have an idea of where we're at. So cost. Do we want to go an hourly? Because that was the suggestion. We either do like $65 an hour and go an hourly route, or we do the flat fee, which is pretty much billing at exactly the same dollar amount, but setting it at 6 hours to compensate for all of that time where the back and forth could happen, and have a flat fee.
I say flat fee so they can't go over.
Okay. I'll go through the list. Corinne?
My brain is tired. I'm wondering, is there some way we could table it until the next time so we have some time to think about it? Because it seems like we have all these great ideas. I'm kind of leaning towards, and I don't know if you said this option, an hourly fee with a cap. But the problem I see with that is that it could cause more problems in the whole process, where you get dragged down into, well, you shouldn't have billed for that, or you shouldn't have billed for that out. You know, like a parent could say, well, that shouldn't have taken you that much time to review that. Or, you know, it could just cause more dissension is kind of my fear on that. But being quote unquote fair, I could see how an hourly rate with a cap.
If you put an hourly rate with a cap, what would our cap be then? Your cap would be, what, somewhere around $1,000? Because what if they do take more than, you know? And then if you're looking at hourly with a cap, but they take, I don't know, I guess I'm trying to think as a business too. So what would be attractive to them as well? If you take an hourly rate and then say I spend 10 hours on this child, you don't really know, then I'm capped at $1,000. Well, I put in all this extra work and I won't get paid for it. When you start putting hourly on it, those questions will come up both ways, not just for the parent, I think for the business too.
Well, you know,
that's
true.
I understand you are hoping to spend less because some kids aren't going to require that much, but then it's just hard. It's hard either way.
That's kind of like the law of the averages. It all just kind of averages out, you know.
Yeah, average, right.
It really does. That's why it's tough to find the perfect balance here.
So we've got to go with average.
I think on average, the $65 or $66 an hour with a 6 hours per, you know, an average of 6 hours for each case. And again, considering that's all the communication back and forth with the parent, discussions,
and then
reviewing,
sitting down and writing the report. You have
writing
to read
the
everything,
report,
talk to the parent, compile everything, and then you have to sit down and write this.
Yeah, that's true.
I could easily see that taking 6 hours.
Easily.
I could see that taking potentially even more, depending on the parent. Mm-hmm. So, something, and that is something that any business person would consider. Those are all things that they would consider as they determine whether or not the RFP is something that they want to do. But again, on the flip side, I completely understand the parent, you know, the struggles and concerns there. How do you find the money for this? How do you plan for it? That's why we have to kind of strike that balance as best we can. So what we can do is table, everybody kind of think about what we've talked about.
Okay.
We will bring this back to discuss at the next meeting, which will be the 29th of November, as the agenda item to talk about, and just kind of so we can make a final decision. Okay, so then really quickly, I want to wrap back to student eligibility and just ensure that we are and we're all on the same page. The factors that the team does have to evaluate is the information contained in the most current eligibility documentation, IEPs, METs, the student's present levels of academic achievement as reported by the school, the private school, the parent, and tutors, therapists, any service providers that are in their life, and then any student post-goal self-reporting for those students that this would be applicable to, reporting what their goals are and how the program would help them meet their needs. And how it would help them achieve those goals if they stayed on. And then administratively, our staff will ensure that they do meet criteria for 15, 24, 01, 1, 2, and 3, and that they have not exceeded the age out of 22.
Yes.
I did have a question regarding the beginning of the school year. What you'll need to set a date on that, because my district starts school July 25th, other districts start in August or even September for some private schools. So you will want to put prior to a date, I think.
I'm not sure. Oh, I see what you're saying for age 22. So the way we're going to do this is the contract, what we've discussed doing is the contract year in which the student turns 22 would be their last year on the program. So what that means is if they turn 22 in June and the contract starts July 1st, they cannot continue on the program. If they turn 22 in August, their contract started on July 1, they would get that last full year, which is my understanding how schools do operate.
So if they have not reached 22 prior to July 1, what you're saying?
Correct. Prior to the ESA contract year, because that is what we're looking at. Yeah. So as long as they hit 22 mid-year, similar to the way it would work in a school, if they hit 22 mid-year, they would get to finish out that year.
Well, it came up, one child, we were ready to graduate because his birthday was in July, about July 4th, actually. But school didn't start till July 28th, and so he's going to school again.
Right.
So it
would be the same thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
July 1, I got it.
Yep. Okay, everyone okay with that eligibility criteria? Let's do a vote, I guess, and see where everyone stands. So.
Okay, so let me go ahead Diane, how do you feel about, do you agree with the criteria we've established?
Yes.
Okay, Corinne?
Yes.
Kelly Anderson is not present. Andrea Robertson?
Yes.
And Alicia Miller?
Yes.
Okay, great. And then I think we should do a vote on the report as well, the AEP report.
Okay, so a vote on the report. Diane?
What am I voting on?
Let me go over the AEP one more time. The contents of the AEP report we discussed would be they would have to tell us what means of communication they use. So did they do phone conference, in person? So how did they go back and forth with that parent? They would need to tell us who was present in the IET, so the members of the team, the qualifications of the team, and then the parents and everyone who participated. They would need to tell us a determination, so the student should continue on or should not continue on. And they would need to recap all of the documentation, so a summary of the documentation that they reviewed based on what we are requiring the parent to submit to prove eligibility. They would need to review those documents and then summarize what was in those documents that they reviewed. And then there would need to be a summary of the conference call with the parent, including the date, information that was discussed during that meeting. And then, and then that was it. That's what we discussed would be necessary within that report that would be submitted to the parent and to ADE. So,
okay.
With that, go ahead and take the vote.
Okay, so Diane, are you...
Okay,
good. Corinne?
Yes.
Was that a yes or a no? I'm sorry.
That was a yes.
Okay, great. Kelly Anderson, not present. Andrea Webb Robinson?
Yes.
And Alicia Miller?
Yes.
Great. Okay.
Perfect. Okay. So then with this, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. So we will table the discussion for cost because I know we still have some questions. The two things that were proposed was we landed pretty much at the same dollar rate. So is it charging hourly with a max and a cap or just having a set amount? So just kind of go back, consider that, maybe do some research on, if you'd like to, on the cost for those individuals, average cost, that sort of thing. If you'd like to bring that back for the next meeting, which is November 29th, and then we will discuss that further and then go to vote the next meeting on that particular item. The next thing we will try to review during that, the very next meeting, will be procedures. So now that we have an idea of student, we voted and determined student eligibility, and we've determined the independent evaluation team criteria and the report criteria, I will be writing up, my staff and I will be writing up procedures for how ESA staff will actually process this, so what the internal process will look like, what a parent can expect, and then you guys will start to review that. It may come in pieces. Hopefully I can just get the entire process written and then get that submitted so we can review this, and then we'll be good to go after one more meeting. But if not, we have meetings scheduled through December. So with that.
But before we call the meeting, just real quickly, I just wanted to make sure if anyone else was on the phone that was wanting to make a public comment.
Oh, that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Anyone over the phone that wants to do a public comment? Okay.
No. Just that I appreciate the way that this agenda was laid out today with all of the details already in, and it was much easier to follow.
You too.
I really appreciate that. So if there's any way we could do that next time, that would be fantastic.
Okay, and who was this?
Alicia.
Alicia. Perfect. Okay, wonderful.
And absolutely, next time will be structured in the same way.
Okay, and
thank
anyone
you.
Present making a public
My
comment?
No? This is Diane Bruning. My public comment is that we want a process and a cost that's reasonable for parents to achieve and to pay for. And we also want to be accountable for the public funds that are being used, that they are dedicated to youngsters and not to, divert from that. Helping kids get to their future, if we're going to be using public money, that ought to be the goal of this process and the outcome of the costs associated to the state.
Okay, thank you. And then just to make sure everyone's on the same page, we understand that the next meeting is going to be scheduled for November 29th?
Yes.
And can everyone be that's present be, attend that meeting same time? Diane, will you be able to attend?
10 o'clock to noon.
10 o'clock to noon, November 29th. Okay, Corinne.
You know, I have another meeting for my son. It's actually a Skype evaluation meeting, and it starts at 11. So I'm not sure. But if we need to do a vote that you need my vote for, can you just let me know? I can maybe be on for like the first 30 minutes or 40 minutes.
Okay. Sure. Okay, not a problem.
Sorry.
Kelly Anderson is not online. What about Andrea? Can you attend?
Yes.
Okay, Andrea can attend. And Alicia?
Yes.
Okay, great. So it looks like we will have quorum. Corinne, if you are unable to attend.
Okay.
But if we, for whatever reason, do not have quorum, I will contact you and you can quickly jump on and we can get wrap it up quickly. Okay?
Okay.
We can plan to do the review of the cost right at the beginning and try and just get that resolved. So that way, if you're able to and can anticipate attending that, then that would be great.
Yes.
And if not, like as she said, we will have quorum. So,
okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, for participating. We really appreciate everyone's input. And we will see you or hear you on November 29th. Okay?
All right. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Thank
for calling the meeting. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, we decided.
We did. We really did. That was great. Thank you.